Righty. My name's Tom Troe, and I'm the Regional Recovery Support Specialist for Region 3 for DHS Division of Mental Health. Many of you know that. What you may not know is that I was an IPS client, or Individual Placement Support client, at one point along my journey. With today's presentation, you'll notice on the next slide, you'll see a slide that is entitled The Foundational Principles of Wellness, which you may want to refer to periodically throughout the presentation. The next slide is a goal-setting form, which individuals can use, whether it be for employment or recovery, for any goal that we may have in life, that can be utilized as a tool with this presentation. The first next slide that we want to talk about is hope. First of all, I didn't come to a mental health center to get better. I entered the doors to try to get my pain to go away. My son and I were shot on the front porch of our Peoria Heights home in September of 2002. During the first year, I endured seeing 53 different doctors, had 7 surgeries, spent 32 days in the hospital, went to over 400 counseling, medical, and therapy appointments. I had 2 suicide attempts, one by police. I spent a year on a walker, only able to wear sweatpants. I lost my home, my business, left a 23-year marriage, spent a month in a nursing home, and moved into a group home for a year. I've sat in doctor's offices and hospital emergency rooms and seen people's expressions change when they learn I have a mental disorder. It used to really hurt when that happened. Today, I find it to be more of a character study. Along my journey, I learned that I had disorders that came with names like post-traumatic stress and major depression. At about 7 months into recovery, they added bipolar disorder. I was devastated to learn this at the age of 47. You know, my doctor pointed out that, you know, it may not have been normal for 47-year-old men to work 14 or 16 hours a day, 6 or 7 days a week. Play basketball for 2 hours at a time with people 20 years younger than themselves, and perhaps that bottle of booze I drank daily may have been a problem. That brings us to the kind of the headline of today's presentation of using the foundational principles of wellness as a tool for goal setting. Hope is a huge universe, always changing and always evolving. It's like a moving target. I can remember a time when the only hope I had was to be able to get out of that hospital bed. That changed and evolved to being able to walk again, to getting out of the nursing home, to moving out of the group home and live independently, and to drive again. When my case manager asked me what I hoped for, I said I wanted to go back to work. The naysayers were all telling me that I'd never work again, and finding many reasons why I couldn't or shouldn't. Hope is all about our beliefs. I had a belief I could do things for them to happen. Henry Ford once said, "You think you can, you think you can't, either way you're right." Before our hopes can become our goals, we must first believe. That belief can be found in 3 words, "Yes, I can." How do I turn these hopes into goals? First, believe you can. Then set goals. Then you can keep believing. Before you can set a goal as a tangible outcome, we must first define why. Next slide. Having a hope does not require action. Setting our goals and achieving those goals are 2 totally different things. While hope is a belief and a concept, achievement of a goal is a measurable, tangible outcome. Why do folks today that are listening in, why do they work? So, there are different relationships between hope and spirituality. Now, they can change those hopes to goals. This does not automatically mean the goal will happen. There are steps and other things that need to be done to take that goal and have it become a reality. What are some examples of individuals' strengths that might, you know, help them to achieve those goals? You might ask yourself, now that a person has established their employment goals, what are the action steps needed to turn their goal into reality? kind of brings us to personal responsibility. It's all about making decisions and then taking appropriate action steps. With my mental health, those meant that after a year of only wearing sweatpants and a t-shirt and a year on a walker, I got where I really probably couldn't care less about my personal hygiene. So my personal responsibility was that I needed to take my meds properly, show up for appointments, and maybe clean myself up. With employment, some of those were also in line. The first thing was taking on personal responsibility by, you know, I might be listing what my job history was. I might be showing up for appointments in times, and I might pay more attention to attending to personal hygiene and self-care. For me, those definitely things that I could touch base on were collecting my work history, writing a resume, determining whether or not I wanted to work full-time or part-time, cleaning myself up, and I was really the only person that knew my work history. I wonder where that's going to take us. So what are some examples of self-identified strengths that might assist a person to achieve their goal? It's actually a duplicate slide, was on the wrong one. Move on. How might taking on more personal responsibility positively impact the other foundational principles of hope, support, education, self-advocacy, and spirituality? The side benefits from that was that people were starting to encourage me, which gave me more hope. When somebody says, "Nice job, Tom," that makes me more hopeful and more willing to take on other things. And by the way, the things I was doing under personal responsibility gave me more confidence, which continued to strengthen my hope more and more. So that kind of takes us to the good old word support. You know, when enrolled in an IPS program, what supports might be helpful in achieving an individual's goals? Their employment specialist, the internet, recovery support specialist, maybe the RAP or Wellness Recovery Action Plan facilitator. With my mental health, I had 7 doctors, medications, recovery support specialists, psychiatrists, support groups, and my case manager. What supports did I have for going back to work? Well, my case manager did give me a lot of encouragement. The employment specialist really worked with me from the IPS program. The peer mentors were encouraging me by saying, "Yes, you can." And Social Security disability income really helped carry me through. In my case, how did this benefit me? What was the encouragement and the accountability? When we take a look at personal responsibility and support, the key is to keep them in balance. What happens if a person takes on too much personal responsibility without enough support? When I ask this question, quite frankly, to groups of people, sometimes what I hear back is people can get pretty frustrated or overwhelmed, or sometimes they just give up. So you don't want too much personal responsibility without any support. On the other hand, what might happen if a person has too much support and does not take on enough personal responsibility? When I ask that question, sometimes I get responses like doing for someone instead of them kind of learning how, and I hear words like enabling and things like that. So hopefully you can see the value of keeping personal responsibility and support in balance. I believe success and failure in employment can often be found because these two principles are not in that balance. I wanted to remind everybody that it's not our job to figure out for people, but instead to empower the person that we're working with to figure it out for themselves. We must honor that everyone that we work with is unique. Now, this is going to take us right to the education slide. And with my mental health, a lot of what I was doing was going to groups such as grief, anxiety, pain management, dialectic behavioral therapy, depression in men, and yes, I am a proud graduate of anger management 3 times. I spent a lot of time asking people who had what I wanted how they got it. And I'd also ask other people, you know, when I'd hear them talking about new programs, to tell me more about it. So my case manager and I sat down. We took bits and pieces from our one-on-one sessions, groups, and those things that other people had that I wanted to develop my own personal recovery plan. You know, just learning that IPS existed was actually a form of education. When it came to employment, the education that I got was, first of all, benefits counseling. I had 6 different analysis done from the beginning of my employment. When I started, I was an author and speaker, and I had to watch that gainful activity. And then I was a speaker for a mental health association. I worked as a peer mentor. I had ringing a bell for the Salvation Army one Christmas. And eventually, this took me back to full-time employment. The role-playing myself and the employment specialist did was extremely beneficial. Having to figure out how to explain a long gap in employment was big. My greatest challenge were that I always had great jobs. I had been a regional manager for Bonanza and run a string of pancake houses, supper clubs, a string of Kentucky Fried Chickens, and was food and beverage director of the Peoria Civic Center. I had also sold advertising and been very active in the fertilization and weed control business where I had 128 employees. You know, I learned that I had to start over. I was either overqualified or underqualified for everything I was applying for. You know, got to the point where I was actually almost feeling like I was having to grovel for a job. In other words, just give me a shot. Then I had to learn about transportation options. Not being able to drive for almost 2 years was huge. So learning how to navigate the public transportation system was a huge challenge, to say the least. My first attempt at full-time employment was not a success, but it also was not a failure. It was a learning experience. The only full-time employment I could find was taking incoming phone calls from Verizon internet customers that were calling in to fire us. My job was to talk them out of it. Heck, that seemed easy enough. I used to do the training of telemarketers and write phone pitches for a living. What I did not allow for was that my new job made my mental health symptoms worse. I did not make allowances for the change within me where I could not do something that I did not have a passion to do. I did the job fine, but hated it. I came to the realization that I needed to do something in my career that gave me meaning and purpose. So if we think about it, we might ask ourselves, or what are some other examples people might get in education if someone's actually looking for employment? That kind of brings us to self-advocacy. Self-advocacy is asking for what we need. In my mental health recovery, I was a great adversary, but knew very little about how to advocate. I actually had a bit of a reputation as being spoiled and maybe a bit of a bully. People used to say the building used to shake as I approached. After all, I was a proud graduate of anger management 3 times. The director of outpatient services overheard someone say that I was spoiled. She flew around the corner, and she said, "Tom is not spoiled. He is advocating for receiving the best possible services, and that is his right." However, she did add, she really wished I would learn a healthier way of expressing myself. So I hope you can see that direct link between self-advocacy and education. What types of advocacy might benefit someone enrolled in IPS? You know, there are many different things. I actually had an experience that I found to be rather interesting. I remember the frustration of having to start over again. I also remember having an employment specialist talking to me about this wonderful opportunity she had found for me. It was working at UPS as a packer on a production line. Now, let's keep in mind, I had a fairly new artificial hip, half use of one arm, and had issues with sciatica, and was only a few months removed from prostate resection. I never applied for that employment, and probably walked away a little bit angry. But after thinking for a few days, it was my first example of successful self-advocacy when I went back and asked her to please not refer me to jobs that I could not physically do. So how might all those interact, all those different foundational principles of wellness? For the position, you know, hold on, lost spot, move on, Tom. So the question becomes, how might self-advocacy positively impact the other foundational principles of hope, personal responsibility, support, education, and spirituality? So that brings us back to spirituality again. Hopefully you can see that the lines on the foundational principles were all connected, and how recognizing and being successful in one area can positively impact another. A person can enter the matrix at any one of these principles, but always remember that at some point, that hope of going back to work is what really is all about. People can learn about IPS through hope by understanding that desire to work, by supporters pointing out that IPS exists, by educating oneself about what services are available at their agency, or by advocating to fulfill their desire to get a job. Today I have a career and a job. I had been with it for almost 8 years. Had it not been for that, I'm not real sure where I might have been. That hope, personal responsibility, support, education, self-advocacy, and spirituality, if without them, I would not have the career I have today. My work is part of what gives me meaning and purpose. So I like to think that my career is part of my spiritual foundation. Thank you for joining me today.